Morning, honorable members. Morning, Sports and Recreation South Africa, DG, and your team. I think it's time that we get started with the business of the day. Can we have just a moment of silence and for prayer and meditation? Amen. Let me take this opportunity to welcome Sports and Recreation South Africa coming before this committee today to present the annual report of the department. maybe before we continue with the business of the day, we want to note the fact that both the minister and the deputy minister are not able to make it to the meeting. It is a worry to the committee. We know that the minister will always be held up on a Wednesday because it's the day for cabinet. We have accepted that. We have learned to live with it as a committee. But we have always thought that it is possible for the deputy minister to come so that in case there are political questions raised by the committee, they are then able to assist us in that regard. But subsequent to that, I've been informed by the ministry that the minister is not well, deputy minister is not well as well, and therefore is not going to be able to make it to this meeting. That leaves us with the DG to drive the processes and attempt to respond to issues, even those that are political. I don't know if the honourable members want to raise an issue in that regard. Honourable Samba.
Noko ayiqhelekanga into yokokuba kwi-annual report singabi naye uminister okanye u-deputy minister xa engazubakho uminister, kuba kaloku sithetha nge-report yonyaka, silindele into yokokuba sifumane i-political report, i-political overview from the minister or the deputy minister. Noko mna as i-member yale committee ndibona noko ingathi asithathelwa ngqalelo as i-members yale committee. Okokuba bingeve sijongene nocelomngeni kwicala lexesha, ngendisithi department mayiphinde until kuze uminister or the deputy, but because we sinepressure kwicala lexesha namhlanje bendizawuthi masibanike into ethi asiphindanga, ingakumbi xa kuqalwa unyaka naxa kugqityezelwa unyaka mali, singabi nabo apha ekomitini. Enkosi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, members. Good morning, everybody. I don't know, Chairperson, because this is becoming a trend that we have been regarded and handled in this manner. If it was according to me, I would say I don't care about time, because if you don't consider time, it means you don't care about it. It means the department is not ready to give us what is due for us in order for us to be able to execute, to assist one another in terms of finalizing or whatever must be finalized. If it was according to me, I would say let them go back until the minister and the deputy minister are ready to face us. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to add on what my two previous colleagues have said. We are feeling undermined. We are feeling underestimated as this committee by this department. Honorable Chairperson, in addition to that, we got the presentation this morning. Only this morning when we came here. We did not get them before time. I personally had communicated this with the secretaries. For me, that's a concern. I need to read beforehand, before coming here. So if I get it only this morning, it means I haven't been given a chance to to read it. I don't know whether it is communication from that department to us, or our secretary did not have the right numbers to convey the message. Or maybe it's only me who got it this morning. I don't know. But I did communicate this with my secretary.
Professor, when did you send the report? Was it this morning? Okay. The feedback I'm getting is that it was sent yesterday. There is a problem then with the communication that needs to be sorted out between yourself and her office. The honourable members that have spoken actually have expressed a grievous concern, and I really do agree with them, that it puts us in a very awkward position, and it creates a perception that when it is the NCOP, then the executive authority will not necessarily be available. But in the case of the portfolio committee, they do avail themselves. And it does not sit well with us. I don't know if what my statement is accurate when I say so, but we get a feeling that there is that kind of laxity when it comes to the NCOP, and we don't take kindly to that. I understand that the whip is saying that if it went according to her, would actually send the department back, but because of the time pressures that we have, I would plead with the members of the select committee to actually allow the department to go on, but with a message, a very strong message, and a letter that we are going to write as a committee to the secretary, expressing our concern to the ministry that these meetings, particularly the annual report and the APPs, those two meetings, it is almost compulsory that at least a representation from the executive is present at the committee meeting. Maybe other issues we could understand. We do understand also that they've got pressure. You've told me that the minister tried to ask to be excused from the interministerial committee. He was disallowed. We do understand that, but you would have expected at least the deputy minister to be in our midst. We got a report that he is not feeling well. We are not doctors. We're not going to say that is not true. We are merely expressing a concern about these two particular meetings of the select committee. I hope DG will take the message and will write a letter subsequent to this. Thank you. I would request then that you proceed to the meeting.
Thanks, Chair. I hear what you are saying and other members are saying, but my problem is that this is not our first meeting, especially for this department. We always meet with officials. When we approved this plan, it was officials alone. Not the MEC, not the minister, not the deputy minister. We're looking at the performance now. They're also not here. So it becomes a problem, Chair, because if other ministers, as you know, that were responsible for different departments, are able to squeeze themselves, why this particular department? Why this one? It becomes a problem. I hear what you're saying, but I don't think, I'm not sure about this time pressure we're talking about, which one, because as you know that we're busy with the bill in social services, other reports were taking them next year. The pressure that we're talking about, I'm not sure which pressure we're talking about.
I'm talking about the pressure in terms of the quarterly program for this quarter. That is what I'm talking about. That I don't see any other space that you can get from the program that have adopted ourselves as this select committee. Not unless we're going to scratch off an item there in order to fit in the department. I wouldn't have a problem with that. But when I looked at the program of the quarter, I didn't see space that could actually use for engaging the department.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I'm sorry for arriving late. I was caught up in a meeting of the chief whip of the NCOP. So I'm not sure really what is the context of the issues when I arrived, what was discussed. But I can get a sense that the issue is about the minister and deputy minister not being present to engage with the committee. And I'm actually cognizant of the fact that we're only left for 3 weeks before we go to, effectively 3 weeks before recess. And next week is taking parliament to the people and so forth. So I'm sympathetic to the issues that have been raised, that either the deputy, one of the two, must be here. But I'm now looking at the program. It's actually very tired. So if we're going to miss an opportunity to engage with the department now, we might not have an opportunity to meet with them even tomorrow or next week and so forth. So I was actually going to suggest that seeing that they are here, maybe let's utilize the opportunity to engage them, and whatever issues that the chair actually reflected on, let's put them on a letter and send it to the deputy minister. And then the team that is here also, under the leadership of the DG, will be able also to take the message forward to them, so that we don't miss an opportunity to engage them, we send them back, because the minister and deputy are not here. And then we also put ourselves as a committee under pressure to meet them in between the hectic schedule before the recess. That's my proposal that I'm making, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Sir. Let me take this opportunity then to welcome you, DG, and your team once again. We know that you are responsible for outcome 14 of the government outcomes, and your core mandate is to ensure that we've got an adhesive and socially cohesive nation with a common nationality. We are going to be looking at your performance in terms of the targets that you have set for yourselves to meet, and get an explanation of why is it that you did not meet those targets, wherever you did not meet them. We want to believe that as you go on doing your work, you are aligned to the National Development Plan that used this as one of the instruments when you drew this your annual performance plan. We have looked at your presentation and your document and your annual performance plan. We've got issues that want to raise with you, but we are going to give you an opportunity to raise the issues, to do a presentation. Then we are going to raise those issues from the side of the committee. May I apologize to the committee that the technology is failing us. The technician was here, he could not be able to fix it, so we'll be using our notes that we've been supplied with. Let me hand over to you then, DG. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and very good morning to all the honorable members of the Select Committee. At the outset, Chair, I wish to indicate that we would carry the message that the committee had communicated to the political principals, but also to offer the apology of the minister who would have wanted to be here today, save for the cabinet committee meeting that is taking place today, and to which he is a central member as a member of the IMC dealing with the matter on the ban on alcohol advertising and the bill that is currently under discussion. So we had indeed confirmed that with the ministry that the deputy minister would be here today, and this morning the head of his office communicated to us that he's suffering from kidney stones and is unable to wake up, and he was also supposed to have other committees later in the day here at parliament, and he would not be able to make it. I wish to assure the committee that we will carry the message as communicated, and that we should also indicate that we believe
believe that the political principals do take the work of the committee quite seriously. And the last time we were here, in fact, not the last meeting that we were here, but the meeting before the last one, we came with the deputy minister to the NCOP select committee. So we would make an effort to make sure that they do receive the consensus of the committee, and that will be communicated. With me, Chair, is the CFO of the department and the director in the department, as well as the parliamentary liaison officer. We are presenting and tabling the report, the annual report, to the committee after we had undertaken all the work and we had also gone to audit once more and finished. So the report we are presenting here today has been verified by the Office of the Auditor General. And accordingly, I can tell members that we have received an unqualified opinion with no findings on the predetermined objectives being the outcomes and being the issue of the outputs on the all planned targets that we were supposed to have. I have at the outset to indicate that, Chair, I would not go in detail about all the other things, particularly the things that at the last meeting with the committee we had already reported on the achievements thereof and what we had done. In the jealousy of time, we would focus on the targets that were achieved after that meeting, but also to look at the targets that were not achieved and the rationale and the reason of the non-achievement. At the outset, we can indicate that we have achieved 79% of all planned targets, and this has translated into an opinion by the Auditor General of a clean audit opinion on performance, but also on financial information. Our CFO will speak a little bit on the issue of the financial information, whereas I would focus more on the planned targets and the ones that were achieved and those that were not. If we start with the targets that were not achieved in Program 1, the creditor payment age, this is an issue of payment of suppliers within the stipulated legal framework. We have, according to the Treasury system and according to the AG's audit, we have an average of payment of suppliers over 20 days if we take the totality of all payments that were made. The average is 20 days all in all. But the issue is that we do have some of the fewer payments that were made beyond the 30 days requirement. And I think we had set ourselves even a greater target than most departments set. Many departments set themselves to say the average days of payment within 30 days. If we had set our target that way, we would have certainly have achieved it because our average is 20. But we set ourselves even a higher bar than what Treasury is setting for other departments. We set all payments below 30 days. So we say we have not achieved that target because we have not had all payments within 30 days. But if you look at the transaction volumes and also the size of what the value of the transaction is, you would see that we have significantly improved compared to the last financial year. And we are now having issues of disputes, and we have been advised now by the Auditor General to say we must put the invoices of dispute outside the framework of the 30 days, because what our employees do is that when an invoice is tendered, they stamp it to say they have received it. And from that day, there, we count 30 days until it is paid. But if there is a dispute in that invoice during that period, normally you tend to go beyond the 30 days, particularly where, for instance, you have, by the time you issued the order, a person or the supplier had a valid tax clearance certificate. And by the time you have to make the payment, you realize that the tax clearance certificate has expired. If you pay, it becomes a regular expenditure. And so you have to say to the supplier that they must hand in a new valid tax clearance. And during the period you wait, however your number of days are counting, and you tend to go way beyond the 30 days that are required. I think we have not only managed to reduce on the number of transactions, but also we have also managed to reduce significantly on the amount of invoices concerned. So according to the Auditor General, for purposes of the financial year we are in now, we are no longer counting those type of invoices into this thing. We only stamp them as received and count the 30 days from the date when the dispute is resolved, or when now the supplier gives us all the valid documents that are there. The disputes vary significantly, Chair. There are many reasons why there would be disputes. One of them is that you issue an order on the system called Logis, which is the procurement system. And that order, if you have issued it for 21,000 rand, the supplier, when he invoices 23,000. He may have reasons why. He may have delivered more things or whatever the case may have been, or he may have factored other things into the picture. And Logis won't pay until you have resolved that, which may mean that you then have to issue a fresh order and all of those type of things. So that normally will go beyond 30 days. But as I have said, we have set ourselves a much more higher bar than the others. Again, Chair, the issue was on the number of participants in the school sport program. You would recall that we had set ourselves a much higher target. We said that we would want to reach all in all 15,000 learners at the National School Sport Championship. We ended with about 11,000 odd, and the reason for this was that the National Lottery typically would give us 25 million, and that was the commitment we always had, that we would get 25 million rands from them to be able to deliver on the National School Sport Championship and to take teams from provinces and so on. During this financial year under review, the lottery abruptly cut that allocation to 20 million, and which meant that we had to live within what we could afford, and that meant we had to ask provinces not to send specific age categories to the national championship. For instance, in softball, we were forced only to take learners in the under 17, 15 to 17 years age group, but the under 15 and under 13 age groups were then cancelled, which reduced significantly the numbers of learners that had to come to the national school sport championship. As a result of that, we then could not achieve the higher targets that we had set for ourselves, obviously due to financial reasons and considerations in that regard. The other key thing, Chair, was the number of people actively participating in organized sport and active recreation plans. This indicator relates to the provincial activities, because the chairperson and members would be aware that more than 50% of our budget is a grant to provinces. Previously, we didn't have this so-called sector indicators into our own APP, but the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation in the Presidency directed that we should have sector indicators, because the bulk of the money goes to the provinces, and but because it goes through us. Previously, those indicators would have only sat with the provincial government's consent. But now four of those type of indicators were brought into our own APP. So we are totally dependent on what the provinces are doing to be able to achieve these targets. if we say there must be a big walk and we set a target of 3,000 for the Free State as an example, but at the actual big walk they have 2,800, they have not achieved that target, and we then have to take the cumulative achievement that can be verified by the AG all together, and we then look at whether on a cumulative basis the nationally has the target been met or not. And this has become quite testing and difficult, and I can assure you that for instance with a province like the Eastern Cape, record keeping for some of the activities was a big challenge. For instance, they made participants just write their names on a long list, and when the Auditor General had to verify the data, he said he cannot accept this list. He can see that there are about 5,000 people who wrote their names there, but where are their IDs? Where is the signatures? Where is real proof? Because they said that anybody can sit in an office and write up the names as they please. So because of that, those numbers that are not acceptable and that can't be verifiable by the standards of the AG were then all of them put aside. But if we take all the files that we have in our offices nationally and we count everybody that's in there, we have actually by far overachieved on the target. But the question is the standard at which verification can be acceptable by the AG or not. And I think that's where we are with this issue. We are now, as part of the grant framework, now prescribing on what provinces need to do. And equally, even ourselves, we have begun nationally improving. For instance, on the big work as one of the good examples, we have now instituted an electronic system for registration. So participants actually register online, and that makes it easier now to verify. We even had a huge argument with the AG because the Free State gave us a video of the actual big work with the people working, and this list that was seen as unacceptable by the AG. And after a long wrangling and debate, the AG said, yes, we can see the people are working, but we can't count them on the video, you know. And so the likelihood that the list may be rigged is quite high. So as a consequence of that, all participants that took part in that work in the Free State were then not acceptable. So the same goes to almost all of the national activities, including National Recreation Day and the rest. We are now with provinces improving on the reporting instruments. We have now given them a sheet that each and every athlete needs to fill. And now everybody must provide the details that the AG requires. When we did the school sport championship as well, I can tell you, because I know two provinces had a problem with this, Free State and Mpumalanga, where in athletics championships, the parents refused to give the IDs, ID numbers or IDs as well as or copies of the certificate of the children, saying that there are issues of identity theft and they are not so comfortable with the idea of them attaching the birth certificates. For many black parents, they just gave the documentation that we required, but for many white parents, they were not eager to do that. There was a choice I had to make as a DG whether we still allow the children to participate or do we send them home. So I said to the provinces, go ahead, let the children participate in the tournament, and they did. So in that, you will then find that we can only verify by the standards of the AG, only those learners whose IDs and everything are attached and copied and put there. This is also an important thing because it is not only about verification of performance information, but it is also to resolve the issues of age cheating and all of those type of related aspects. But we, like I said, Chair, we are now attending to the issue of the standards with the AG. And I'm saying so because this was the first year we were being audited on this specific key issues. And previously, there was never a necessity for us to develop those instruments because we knew that it is the targets that the provinces on their own had to account to their own provincial legislatures and to their own provincial Auditor General. But now, since they have been brought, we have learned essentially from their first audit of this nature on our part, and we are now putting the requisite instruments to be able to be responsive going forward. The other chair was on the issue of the number of athletes that were supported by the sports academies. We had put a percentage increase in that, and although this is the same issue, Chair, of poor record keeping, almost all our provinces, except two, have provincial academies. And for the two that do not have, they have outsourced those services either to universities or to private providers. But the issue of keeping the actual records and proving that the athlete has gone through the academy has, again, in this regard, been found testing. And as a result, the 5% increase that we are targeted, that we want to show an increase in support to the athletes that went through the academy system, couldn't be achieved. Now, on the issue of the number of major international events receiving intergovernmental support, this one is an issue, Chair, which we think we need to change the target the way it is predetermined. And the reason for that is that we have a bidding and hosting strategy as a country. We know which tournaments we would want to bid for and which ones we would want to do that. And when we had done so and we had submitted that bidding and hosting strategy to Cabinet, and Cabinet had approved it, you would see that this year, specifically this year under review, there were four tournaments we needed to bid for and to support that bidding process and to win that. It was the World Triathlon Series, it was the African Gymnastrada, it was the World Championships on Mountain Biking, and lastly, it was the African Swimming Championships. Now, we had set ourselves that we would support those and we would lobby hard and work on that, but as time approached and the bidding process had to happen, we were told by the Treasury to say, because we have been awarded the rights to the Commonwealth Games in Etiquette in 2022, we must, between now and that period, because there is no money, stop all bidding and hosting processes, and that we shouldn't host anything. In fact, we went ahead and hosted the World Triathlon Series, and we also went ahead and hosted only this year, because then the entire African swimming landscape couldn't be done, and that championship was supposed to have happened last year. It couldn't be held. So a special plea was then made to South Africa to say, we must please host. So we have hosted that championship actually about 3 weeks ago now in Bloemfontein. And we are convinced that we will suspend our entire bidding and hosting strategy up until 2022, particularly for the major tournaments, until the financial situation of the country stabilizes a little bit. And it is for that reason that we couldn't achieve that target, because there was just no money to implement the strategy as envisaged. And typically that money is applied for from the Treasury and is not part of our own budget. If I move to Program 2, Chair, which is the Sport Support Program. Chair, the implementation of the school sport program is still a big challenge for us. There were key milestones we had set ourselves to do. One of the key issues in terms of the APP was the designation of the sport focus schools. We had set ourselves a target of 230 schools designated across 16 codes in the 9 provinces. I can tell you now that this far, we have only managed to register 38 of these schools instead of the 260 we had planned. And the reason for this is that while we have identified the schools and the provinces have identified them, we are totally dependent on the school governing bodies, who in terms of the South African Schools Act have the power to determine the codes of sport being played in school. We have always had a problem with this arrangement, but we are not the custodians of the Schools Act. The Department of Basic Education is. We have proposed to them that they need to pursue amendments on that front. First, that they make school sport compulsory again, and that only children who, because of illness or otherwise, could be exempted from playing. But as a start, all school sport must be made compulsory right across, because right now it's an opt-in system. And in fact, a school governing body may even choose that no sport is being played in a school, and by law we cannot say anything if the school governing body says that. Secondly, we have also said that the powers of the school governing bodies to determine codes of sport alone is a problem. We think that the Minister of Basic Education must have the power to designate school sport codes, and our proposal is that as a start, the so-called Big Five, football, rugby, athletics, netball, and cricket, must be made standard compulsory codes across all schools in the Republic in the seasons that each of these are supposed to be played. In addition, then from the compendium of the remaining 86 codes, the school governing bodies then can designate two or three more, depending on their capacity of the school. They can then harvest and choose any of the additional codes to be there. So this is our proposal to basic education to pursue those amendments that we think will enhance sport. So as a result of this, we have not been able to get all governing bodies to pass the necessary resolutions declaring themselves first as a sport focus school for the specific designated codes for which we are proposing they should. Averagely, we realize it takes about 6 months for the schools to get the governing bodies to really pass that resolution. So it has been testing. We have, out of the potential of 240 schools, managed only to get 38 this far to really get to this point where they can pass that. Secondly, it's our issue of legislation. We have finished a number of laws, some new, some old, but being with amendments, we are trying to push amendments. We had earlier, after discussions, Chair would recall that in our 2014 meeting, I had reported that we have lobbied within government. We were told that we must prioritize out of our potential 7 pieces of legislation, we must prioritize and submit 3 to the leader of government business. We did that. They were put on the roll, and we had said we will do amendments to the National Sport and Recreation Act. We also said that we'll pursue the new Combat Sport Bill that will repeal the Boxing Act, but also manage the whole combat sports. And we also said that we will push amendments to the South African Institute for Drug-Free Sport Act. Those 3 pieces of legislation, we put them in our APP as the laws that we'll pursue during the year under review. But as you know, Cabinet, even though our laws were on that list, Cabinet with the leader of government business took a decision that they will only prioritize economic enabling legislation, and that our laws must then take a back burner. So as a result of that, we can't bring the laws ourselves to Parliament. We have to work through the leader of government business, and this were then put at the back burner. Now it's even worse. This year under review, we repeated the same 3, but we have already received a letter telling us that they say we must prioritize just one. We must tell them which we must choose. So this is going to be a problem even in the next financial year, I must say, this target, because we had put 3 again. If we are lucky, only one will go through. And we have already told them that if that's the case, we would want the amendments to the National Sport and Recreation Act, if they are only to take one. So this is where we are with the laws. There is the fitness industry bill. We have finished it 2 years ago. We are not even able to table it and to do anything with it. We can't even send it to Cabinet because it's not on the roll. So there's a whole host of things. We have done new regulations on bidding and hosting and all of that. Minister is unable to have them gazetted before they have gone for CS and they have gone to the Cabinet system. So we are stuck with legislation, so to say. And unfortunately, we aren't seen as a priority department. So even our laws are not seen as the priority things to be done. But if you really consider the importance of the fitness industry bill, you will realize that some things must give. Even the combat sports bill. I'm sure you know, Chair, that we had an inquiry of the three boxers have now died in the ring in the last 2 years. So that's not good at all. And we believe that the regulator, the new regulatory council that is being established by the combat sport bill will seek to address some of those pertaining weaknesses now. But obviously, the impact that the law is seen, that it will deliver on, is not seen as bigger in the context of the competing priorities. But we feel strong about the type of laws we want to push. Right now, the fitness industry is totally unregulated. Everybody does as they please. And more harm is being done than good by particularly the big ones. We aren't so concerned about Virgin Active and Planet Fitness and all of that. But the smaller gyms and the township gyms and all of this, the machinery is not safe. Some of it is imported from China without even substandards. And some of them are not even having ISO accreditation, and they are being put out there. And often than not, even the fitness instructors, even me tomorrow, I can just wake up and say, I am a fitness instructor, and I can recruit people and start training them. But there is no registration council for them. There is no regulatory council to oversee the work of what these people are doing. And there are reports of people who get heart attacks and everything in gyms and all of that. But is because your training program, Chair, yours and mine can never be the same, because our levels of fitness would not be the same, and our weight, our diet, and all of those things are not the same. And none of these things have been regulated right now. Even at these gyms, the Occupational Health and Safety Act says for every 50 people, you need at least one bathroom or one toilet. And even it's even stricter on the sharing of showers. For every 20 employees, you need one shower. So if you go to Virgin Active and you check how many people exercise there and how many showers are being provided for them, you see a problem. And you already see that there's no time even to sanitize the showers. There's always some queue. When one gets out, the other goes in. The transmission of disease and athlete's foot and all of this type of things are a reality in these gyms, and we have to do something about it. When we look at the other, Chair, is the issue of inadequacy of funding. We had set ourselves an ambitious target, hoping that the committee, like I said the last time I was here, that we're asking the committee to really support us to get the provinces that are not budgeting for sport from the equitable share to do so. So we had, I think, made an ambitious target in our APP to say that we will lobby and work hard to make sure that at least we move from the three that are currently budgeting to six. So we have not achieved that target because it is still that three that are budgeting. The other six are not budgeting. So this is not a target that we can achieve alone. We think the best committee to help us achieve that is this one, because it's a committee that represents the provinces. And we can only but lobby that you work with us. We will not give up on this. It's potentially a terrible target for us because we can't potentially achieve it without the pressure this committee can apply on the provinces. But if we are just abandon it and hope that so that we can achieve a higher target outcome, then it's not good. We must still do the work. The odds are stacked against us in achieving this target because it has nothing to do with what we can potentially do ourselves. When I move, Chair, to the other key programs, I will just touch on the issues that I know that the committee previously raised as concerns. One of them was the issue of filling of vacancies. I can tell you now that we have now filled the vacancies. We have a normative ratio which is acceptable of about 6% because we are a very youthful department. Many of our employees, particularly we take many from university graduates in sports science and what. And after they have worked a year or so, they move on, they get promoted elsewhere and within the system and they move on. So we are, unlike many departments, we are in a permanent state of recruitment and we are recruiting all the time and we are filling vacancies. But now you can remember that there was a time we had a 36% vacancy rate and the committee raised a serious concern, but we have since moved since then. Now our normative ratio is acceptable. In fact, compared to the departments that are considered to be doing well with this, they are at 8% vacancy and we are at 6, so we think we are doing quite well in that respect. From here, Chair, the rest of the other things we have achieved, the targets, those were the only targets we did not reach, but we have achieved almost all our other sub-targets in this regard. I can go on and on about this on the ministerial sports bursary. We are supporting now 52 learners who are highly talented learners, and the good news is that the first batch are doing matric this year. So next year they are going to university, which means an expansion of this program, because when it was originally conceptualized, it was only to support learners in high schools. So we now have to look beyond that and look at supporting these kids when they go to a higher phase. You would also remember that we had achieved our performance targets that we set ourselves for the performances. We had listed tournaments and designated tournaments, and with just one, the I-2015 IAAF Championships, we were able to achieve almost the annual target on the number of medals that we had set to achieve. Again, on the support that we are providing to the national federations, we had exceeded that target by far. And on transformation, as you can recall, Chair, we had set ourselves a target that we would sign up agreements with 5 leading federations and also do an evaluation for 11 others. We did so. All the 11, in fact, we had exceeded that target because we evaluated 12 of the other federations. We will be signing with the secondary 7 agreements in February next year. And you'll also remember that we imposed a ban on bidding and hosting for netball, cricket, athletics, as well as rugby. We will review this when we issue another barometer in February. Chair, we had a target of 20, and we achieved 23 of the federations we have subjected to a code of conduct. For the first time, these federations have a code of conduct, and the athletes there are having that, and we are looking at how this thing will go. And if it works very well, and that code of conduct serves to bring some degree of discipline into the sports sector, then we will spread it to all the 86 recognized sport bodies. One of the greatest things, Chair, that we began last year and which we are happy to report about was the issue of the under 18-year athletes that we are developing as a secondary feeder to our OPEX program. Previously, you'd recall it has always been an issue, and even this committee once raised, I think it was in 2012, it raised the issue of the athletes that are perceived to be good but not being supported. But you'd recall that our OPEX program, for instance, we say that you must on an international circuit at least win the designated tournaments. For instance, if you are in athletics, the designated tournament is the IAAF Diamond League and then World Championships and the World Series. Those three are the designated. If you win in your event of your choice and you get to position one and in other subcourse to position two, you automatically qualify for OPEX. And also, we also say that you can qualify for by international rankings, particularly for team sports. So if you are ranked like in Hockey, we say you have to be ranked in the top 8 in the world, then you are supported on the OPEX program. But the question has always been on the borderline athletes and the feeder to that OPEX, to say, if you are Simon Mahakwe and you have ran a sub-10, 100 meters in less than 10 seconds, it means that you have a potential to be a world beater. But if we look at your competition. You have now been beaten by Usain Bolt and Blake and everybody. So you have not won your tournament, and you have not won the World Series. So how do you access your OPEX money, because you don't by criteria qualify? So athletes like that, we have now designed a new program for them, but with the proviso that we invest in them when they are still younger. So that's why we set the target of under 18s, and those athletes who are helping them. This program is a bridge to give them the necessary support for them to be able to reach the threshold of qualification for OPEX. So this program, we are quite happy because we have included even the coach we think we have a potential to medal in the future. So we have added surfing there, we have included chess, weightlifting, baseball, as well as table tennis. So we even ourselves are quite excited. We managed to get in excess of 115 world-class athletes from 7 federations that we are supporting in this regard. Chair, I won't waste your time on the international bilateral agreements, but safe to say that we are implementing now with BRICS countries. We have started the BRICS Games. The first tournament took place this year on the sidelines of the heads of states meeting in Goa, India, and it's in football. We agreed to start with men's football, so our team Amajita, the under 17, went on to compete in that tournament. We are going to add women's football, so Basetsana will also go to compete there after 4 years when the tournament kicks in again. Then it will be followed by netball. We are still arguing with the BRICS countries according to which code needs to go into that tournament. The Indians are so strong and they feel very strong that we must put in cricket in. But cricket is not so popular in Brazil and in Russia and China. So those are not so keen. So they are looking at sports that will unite all the BRICS countries with ease. And South Africa now has been given the baton to coordinate the BRICS Interministerial Council of Sports Ministers. And that's the work we are working on now. And importantly, we are implementing from next year, Chair, our agreement with Jamaica. In terms of this agreement, it's on the coaching. We are implementing the first leg on coaching. We're exchanging coaches. They want coaches in rugby. They want to start a strong rugby league. And we have engaged SARU. We have done the costings. We will get the Junior Currie Cup coaches to go there. We are sending the first batch of 10 next year. And in return, Jamaica is sending us track athletes in track coaches in athletics. They will also send us the first 5 coaches to come work in rural areas and in rural schools for talent identification purposes. So we are not yet at the point where we are asking them to give us coaches for the elite athletes. We think that we are still okay with that, and we want our local athletes to be coached by local people. So, but we will use more the Jamaicans on a basis of that. Chair, the important thing happening is that the next session of the 5th session of the Conference of Parties with South Africa Chairs is happening later this year. And our Deputy Minister is the chair of that and of the United Nations Conference of Parties on Sport and Recreation. We conducted a facilities audit. This was another sticky issue for a long time, and we were not able to finish, but we had reduced it to a facilities count, and we have now counted across all provinces, all our facilities and so on. The next step is to complete the audit. 2 of our 9 provinces have completed the audit in full, the Western Cape as well as KwaZulu-Natal. We are now done, and we know the state and condition reports of all our facilities in those 2 provinces. We are working now with Gauteng as well as the Free State to try and finish the facilities audit in those 2 provinces. We envisage this program, Chair, will take us a significant period. We estimate 12 to 15 years to complete. simply because the other provinces do not have the type of capacity as this 3F, Gauteng, Western Cape, and KwaZulu-Natal. So that's why it was more easier to finish the audit in full here in Western Cape and in KwaZulu-Natal. In fact, the audit in KwaZulu-Natal cost us a lot of money to complete. When completed, and in all modules, you would be able to enter the system linked to our website, and you can then check. You can say in the area of Mkanyakude, how many sports facilities are there, and it should be able to tell you. And you can say, I want ones for rugby and for this, and it should be able to tell you. You can check seating capacity. You can look at its condition. You can look what surrounding facilities are there. You can check all of those type of things, including you can also have even the GIS coordinates and the GPS coordinates about those facilities. So, and that's what we're looking at. The important thing, Chair, that has happened in our facilities area is that after a long time of fighting for the 15% of the MIG grant to be spent on sport facilities, we have reached some sort of a compromise and a semi-agreement with the Treasury and COPTA that they would, out of the 2 billion a year, set aside 300 million, which we must run as a pilot. So we are in a pilot phase of this. We have chosen 30 facilities across all the 9 provinces, and we are implementing that part of work now, and we have gazetted the facilities that needs to go through. And and Treasury also gave us 6 million rands to now set up a proper facilities directorate that will have the capacity with engineers and quantity surveyors and all of that to be able to do the type of work that we need to do. So we are now about to move to the construction phase, and the 30 projects will be delivered before the end of June next year. And that's where we are. We are now, together with the Treasury and this, appointing contractors on a transversal contract to be able to deliver on all of this. So I think that makes up our story. I will not go into the governance framework. I'm sure you know about this. But the important thing is that the Auditor General agrees with us that we are a very well-run department, and we have now, and it's also acknowledged that we have one of the most youthful and highly educated workforce. Our staff members are highly educated, I can say. Our requirements for recruitment, we really set the bar high, but I think that helps us with the quality of the outputs we get, and our employees, even at lower levels, do an excellent job. I will hand over to the CFO to do a quick overview on the expenditure.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to do a presentation on the annual financial statements that were presented to the Auditor General. The first issue relates to the revenue. In terms of the revenue, we are saying we are amongst the non-revenue generating government department, meaning that the services that we offer to our communities, we are not charging them anything. So most of the revenue that we have in the department is mainly made up of the annual appropriation received from the National Treasury from the National Revenue Fund. We appropriated an amount of 980.8 million rands in the previous financial year. We've also been able to generate an amount of 406,000, which really constitutes less than 1% of the total revenue that we have in the department, which is constituted by interest from bank account. When our bank account is in positive, we generate some interest, recovery of telephone and parking fees and other staff debt. In terms of expenditure, Chairperson, we expense almost all funds allocated in the current in the financial year under review. We spent 99.9% of our budget, which is about 979 million out of 980 million appropriated to the department. We've only underspent with about 977,000 rands only from compensation of employees, an amount of 521 and about 303,000 from both transfer and goods and services. In terms of the breakdown, the economic classification, Chairperson, compensation of employees, we spend 99.4% of our budget. We underspend with about 521,000. We had a budget of 94 million. We spent about 93.7 million. In terms of goods and services, we had a budget of 167.8 million. We spend about 165 million. We underspend about 2.3 million. In terms of transfers, provinces and municipalities, we spend all the money. We were able to transfer all the money that was appropriated, which was 533.2 million. And other agencies, we transferred all the money. In terms of payment for capital asset, we spend 92.9%. We had a budget of 2.1 million. We spend about 2 million from that. There's a narrative there, Chairperson, in the next slide, where we're explaining. I think I've already made this explanation that in terms of compensation of employees, we spend 99.4%. We did a variment of about 4.5 million to goods and services in order to defray over expenditure on departmental projects. In terms of goods and services, we spend 98.6% of our budget. There was that underspend, mainly in bursary payments of non-employees budgeted under goods and services, but expensed under transfers and subsidies. So that's the two million that I spoke to earlier in terms of the underspending goods and services. In terms of transfers, we're able to transfer about 718 million, which represent 100% of the appropriated amount. This simply means that we did not underspend on this budget item. We transferred everything that we had. There's 75% of transfers that we usually make to provinces, which is 533 million. It was transferred to provinces. To clubs and federation, it is 21%, which is about 153 million. It was also transferred. We gave Boxing South Africa, both Boxing South Africa and SAIDS, 30.3 million. Which is about 4% of the transfers. It was also transferred to them. In terms of capital asset, I've already spoken to this. We spent 92.9%, which represents the actual expenditure of two million out of an appropriated budget of 2.1 million. In terms of comparison of three financial years, Chairperson, in 2013-14 financial year, we were able to spend 99.9% of our budget, which was about 1073029 out of a budget of 1073485. In the 2014-15 financial year, we spent 966 million out of a budget of 970 million, which represented 99.6%. In the 2015-16 financial year, we spent 99.9% of our budget. I've already spoken to this. We had a budget of 980 million. We spent 979. So it shows that we are hovering around 99% of our budget. We've got capacity to be able to spend the money appropriated to the department. In terms of expenditure per program, Program 1 was appropriated 114.5 million. We spent 114.4 million. We underspend with about 59,000, which is 99.9%. Active Nation was appropriated 652.2 million. We spent 652.1 million. Winning Nation was appropriated 57.152 million. We spent 56.510 million. We had an underspend of 642,000. Sports Support was appropriated 154 million. We spent 153.9 million. Infrastructure Support Program 5, it was appropriated 2.9 million. We spent 2.8 million. There was an underspend of about 150,000. In terms of transfers, provincial conditional grant was appropriated 533.2 million. We transferred all the amounts to all provinces. Boxing South Africa was budgeted 10.4 million. We transferred all the money to the entity. SAIDS appropriated 19.8 million. We were able to transfer that money. CASITA, 79,000, we only transferred 60,000. There were some calculations which were done, and we realized that we're only supposed to transfer only 60,000 rands to them. In terms of national federations, we transferred all the money that was appropriated to them, which was about 153 million. In terms of provincial allocations, Chairperson, we at the beginning of financial year, we had 537.2 million. But provinces requested rollovers of about 8.6 million, which Treasury approved. But in the middle of the financial year as well, we were requested to cut our budget. So we cut our budget with about 4 million throughout the department. So from transfers, we cut about 4 million. All in all, the amount that was transferred to provinces was about 533,000. Eastern Cape was transferred 61 million. Actually, 60 million ultimately. Free State was transferred 64.3 million. Gauteng, 89.5 million, which is our largest province. KwaZulu-Natal, 88.6 million. Limpopo, 61.5 million. Mpumalanga, 43.3 million. Northern Cape, 29.1 million. Northwest, 40.7 million. Western Cape, 55.1 million. We utilize the same formula that the Treasury is utilizing, even though we've implemented some, what is it called? Yes, in order to make sure that Northern Cape is not prejudiced or because of the population size, there's some share scheme that we've developed that all provinces have agreed to in order to make sure that at least they receive additional funding. In terms of challenges that were identified, Chairperson, there are still some gaps in the departmental internal control system, even though a lot of improvement has been experienced. In finance, there was an issue around issues of 30 days, which we are currently addressing. There's a standard operating procedure that we're implementing, which is really bearing fruits. At least for now, we're able to pay suppliers within the required period. In terms of achievement, we've already spoken to the issue of around the clean audit for the third time. Consecutively, we've been able to achieve the clean audit. We've been able to reduce our AG findings, the other findings. In that financial year, we're at about 70 findings. We're at 40 now. We're working towards to reduce them further. The issue of payment of suppliers, I've already spoken to it. It's an issue that we need to address, to attend, even though there's been an improvement in the previous financial year. In terms of achievement, the issue of the clean audit, I think we've already spoken to this one. There are comments that have been made by the Auditor General there that I think members could go through. I think that's where we are, Chairperson, but our story in the main is that we've been able to retain our clean audit. We've been able to spend 99% of our budget. At least we've not incurred all this unnecessary, unauthorized, irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. The department did not incur those. So that's where we are. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I just have two issues which I want to raise for the department. It's in regards to, I'm not sure which program is it exactly, but it's human resource management related. I know the DG in his presentation mentioned that last year when we were engaging the department, we raised a very serious concern around the implementation or filling of all funded posts at the department. And I know in his presentation he says at least the department has improved from where they were last year onwards. But I'm not sure. There was also an issue about gender transformation at the level of senior management level. I'm not sure if the DG can just explain on that regard, because remember last year he said there are directors which the department is employing, but there's not even a single female. So it looks like the Department of Sports Recreation of South Africa, it's actually at that level, it's male dominated. So if the DG can just elaborate and explain to us. And I've also noticed that on page, I think it's 99, it was on page 99 of the annual report. And then 96 deals with the DG also spoke about the implementation of school sports at the level of the different schools as part of the curriculum, which is also a challenge. Now, it was reported also in the annual report, page 90, I think it's 96, that the department, when we met them last year, they were about to advertise a sports director position for labor relations and director of school sports. And then they indicated that between the months of March and April 2016, they would have filled that position. If the DG can also just take us into confidence and elaborate more in that regard. Thanks, Chair. I just want to limit my questions to the annual report and not speak. I know we're in oversight, but I just thought, let me raise these two issues, DG. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to thank HOD for the presentation. It appears to be a well-run department. I would just like to, I've got three questions. Firstly, I would like the emphasis of matter that was referred to by the AG, and that is the HOD also referred to that, and that is the payment of debtors within 30 days. Now, the AG made a remark, if the 900, it's this year, the payables are not recognized which exceed the payment term of 30 days as required by treasury regulations, and that amounted to 10.794 million. And I said, if that amount in fact were paid, then an amount of 9.817 would have been constituted unauthorized expenditure. Now, I understand that the situation and the problem. I would like to know whether this is a repeat finding. The answer is already no, I see, shaking the head. But then I understand that the target has been set higher to do payments in 20 days, but will this be addressed in terms of the internal shift that was made in terms of payment? Then I look at the payments to NGOs, sports body, national federations, etc. And I've also put a question on this issue, but some months ago I have not yet received a response on it. And that is these, Chair, you will recall, big photographs of checks that are being handed over to comrades winners, medal winners, money being paid, promised to even medalists, Olympic medalists, coaches. I would like to know, how does it work, and where does it get funded from, and how long does it take actually to get paid? And were there any, in the year under review, were there any of these promised monies that were not yet paid? Then, just because I don't find it here, I suppose we will at some stage get the two entities' annual reports. I haven't seen it. Would love to see the two. And I just would like to know what was the commitment, financial commitment, or the support that was referred to the RADU and to CDA. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me appreciate both the presentation by the DG and the financial unit. We're talking about a native nation. Let me give an example where I come from in Tubat. I haven't seen any governmental recreation center whereby our communities are able to exercise in different ways. I don't know whether maybe it might be the responsibilities of the municipalities per se. I need to be clarified in that regard so that I make follow-ups with the department. based on that also talking about an active nation. In our communities, we have people who are practicing bokiba, makhakhasa, dipepetwana, just like that. But we have a problem whereby, I don't understand, when you want to see the department assisting these people, I don't know, maybe it's me who doesn't understand. It's a very long way. I know the department has got a grant. They've got their own programs. But how can we assist our upcoming communities in terms of seeing that they achieve these things? I'm raising this, though I know that it doesn't fall within you, but I'm just raising this because even young girls and boys who are practicing soccer, maybe during school, after school hours, they're not being assisted. I don't know which way is better for us to see to it that this upcoming sports fanatics are being assisted. We want future seminars, we want years, was it all, we want to see them upcoming, but how do we achieve that as provinces? Can I be clarified about these provincial allocations? I don't understand whether the national department is saying the 100% spent here is the allocations spent by the departments to provinces. Then I understand. Then okay, I'm clarified. It means, in other words, it's me who must follow up with my province to say the 63 million which was allocated to you, what is the outcome? Okay, I understand in that manner. And then thank you very much. You're talking about escalation of prices because in terms of uniform, social development has identified cooperatives which they make these uniforms. They approach them when they want to assist poor communities in terms of seeing to it that they assist. I don't know with yourself that are you able also to encourage our people to have these cooperatives so that they assist in terms of seeing to it that the uniforms that we're talking about, they are able to produce them and we buy them in a lesser price. I don't understand, but social development is this. Thank you, Shepherdson.
Thank you, Honorable Shepherdson. Let me join my colleagues by saying, by welcoming the presentation from the department, but mine, Chair, is on e-clarity. It's a clarity question on page 3. Of the presentation, bullet point number 2. The department obtained a clean audit opinion on performance and financial information. But Chair, when you go to page 4 of the presentation on targets not achieved, bullet point number 2, can the department give me a clarity on the 2? The clean audit, the clean audit opinion against the targets not achieved. The FUNU ABET, adult and basic education on this one. And thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm covered by Honorable Stock. Thank you.
No, thanks, Chair. Let me also welcome the presentation and also appreciate the fish for swimming well in terms of the clean audit. We really appreciate, and I always said it might be easier to get a clean audit but difficult to maintain it. We want to appreciate that from the department. Having said that, H&M, there's a lot of EBIT that need to be taken through here. I'm saying this, Chair, because when we meet like this, it's not just a question of listening to what the department is saying and ask question and go. It's also as part of our oversight, take the interests of our provinces at heart, try to influence the department. The first thing that I would want to check is that in terms of your reporting, if you say, are the targets 37 or 34? Because I look at our analysis, we have 37 targets, but you reported on 37 targets. Just one clarity there. Do you have 37 targets or 34? Then the second matter is that when you said you've achieved 79% in terms of your target, are you using the reporting standards? Because according to the reporting standards, if you have a target of training, let me give an example, 100 people. I've seen in your report a number of targets. You did not achieve everything. If you have planned to train 100 people and you train 90, according to the reporting standard, I'm talking about professional now, you have not achieved your target. In your reporting now here, what have you used? Because I've seen a number of them, you have achieved a certain, partially achieved, if I may use that term. What have you used in terms of, to determine the 79%? Che, go slide number two. I think it's performance overview. 972 million of the allocated 987.9 was spent. Straight. Oh, this slide number two. You're talking about, yeah, it's at the beginning of your presentation. You're saying of the 979 million that is allocated to you, you spent 980. Yabona nawibuka ngesi is other way around. Yeah, because uma uyifunda is EBIT, isho ukuthi ni overspendile. Manje nina nikhuluma underspending. I wanted to look at this. Uma uyifunda nge English isho ukuthi you say off the allocated, yeah. But if you say the other way around, then I hear what you say. Bengiti EBIT, yeah. Bengu EBIT there. But, Che, I want to agree with Honorable Stock. I'm also one of the people who are very much passionate about women. Angishogut Pumani from the minister, deputy minister, the DGs, and the whole crew. No, you're not representing us. I cannot be proud and say as a woman of South Africa, I am represented there. Something has to be done. That is why I'm saying our meeting here is to influence the department, not just to talk. Do consider in the future appointment women. We want to see women there because where I'm sitting, I raised it last time, where I'm sitting, I'm saying maybe that is why there's not much happening with women. You just reported now in BRICS you started with men. Why not women? Was there a formula to say start with men? Why didn't you start with women? Banyana Banyana, for example, over Seza. Is it because we're not represented at management level as women? To some of us, those are serious things because in our other lives, we're representing women. So we want to see that transformation happening on a serious note. It goes to the, you know where I stand with this one. Youthful and educated department. It sounds good to you. Chairperson knows that how I feel about it. We had some time on this matter before. I still maintain that I'm from Mpumalanga province, a province which have a history of not having a university. There are very few of us who are educated. Are we represented in that department? If we are proud to say people with degrees, young people, the other question I have there, does it mean that sports for young people only? If so, why do we have old coaches in almost all clubs. For me, that it means that it's not about working hard. Energy is about working smart. You can have a youthful department, but not working smart. You can have an old or aged department, but working smart. So, my issue, Chair, we still have so many unemployed people. If there are vacancies where we can put people who are not employed and does not have degrees, let's consider them, because they belong to South Africa. They are South Africans. That department is their department too. So they could be considered if there are vacancies which does not really need a degree. I know it's a good thing, it sounds good, but if you look at the situation in South Africa, it needs to be considered. Then the last thing, Chair, is I don't have much to say because e-report was not speaking to provinces except when he was talking about one item where he wants us to influence our provinces, but it could have assisted to look at sports activities at provincial level. But also there was an issue of Free State in Mpumalanga on the IDs. Maybe if one could have specifics, we can be in a position to assist, because you can't just be general. We could be in a position to assist. Those are my issues, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Just to add a few. Firstly, the DG says in his presentation that we have achieved 79% of the planned target, but you have almost exhausted your budget. I don't see the relationship between the two. They don't tally. How do you almost exhaust your budget when you have not completed your targets? Under administration, under program one, the issue of the payment of creditors within 30 days has been raised and you've clarified it, but I want to argue and say, had those creditors been paid, DG, your department would be in the right. And I don't think you'd have got the clean audit that you got. So maybe we need to be very careful regarding this issue. With regards to training, you had targeted to train 60 officials, I think, in-house. Was it in-house training or was it outsourced? Because you increased your target by over 200%. They planned 60 and you ended up training 127. My question is, where did you get the money? And the issue of compensation of employees, where the CFO is saying 99.4% spent, but there was a environment of 4.5 million to goods and services. So you had to choose to do the environment versus employing more people. I see clarity in that regard. You achieved that simply because there was a environment. Otherwise, you'd not have been able to achieve that. And then the issue of sports kits to schools. Half the target, almost half the target was achieved because the reasoning is that the pricing, it escalates. My question is, when you actually plan, because you know that you should have projections, and you must know that if you plan 2 years from now, the price will be much higher than where we're sitting now. I don't think your planning is checked up. And then the evidence of people participating in the Vera Sporting Code, you did explain that one, that it is very difficult to collect evidence. We need to ensure that you develop a template where you collect that evidence, because there is a lot of money going into it in order to support that you've got an X number of people that actually are participated at the level of provinces. You did well in program 3. You achieved 6 out of 7. But there are four federations, I don't know if you did explain that decision, that were not supported in international events. Maybe you'll give clarity insofar as that one is concerned also. In Program 4, you achieved all the targets, 7 out of 7, that is commendable. And then auditing of facilities in provinces, DG, I really don't think it can take 12 years. Not unless it is extremely expensive, but I thought maybe 5 years would be reasonable enough to actually conduct that audit and completely. The issue of vacancies, you said you are at 6%, I thought you were at 12%. Please clarify that one as well. Meek, the 300 million that you're talking about, did you say that this is an amount taken out of MIG to address the issue of sports facilities or projects directly? I missed that one. I see clarity in that one. SAFA, the support of federations is critical. And I was made to understand, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, that SAFA is actually drifting towards being in the red. What is the department going to do about that? Boxing South Africa, again, it was dwindling, and you are resuscitating it, I want to believe, and I hope that, I think the board has been changed, isn't it? And the lady is gone, and putting a male once again, the issue of women. No, my information is wrong. Oh, okay. All right. And then the resignations. There are too many people leaving the department, DG. Why? What is wrong in the department that would cause people to actually leave your department at that rate? 14 resignations in one financial year, I think in my own assessment is quite a lot. What is the reasons are they giving for leaving the department? Those would be a few issues that, or the athletes that are from the Olympiads. Have they been given what is due to them? Have they been paid their money? Okay, thank you. And still come in. Just to develop on that one, Honorable Samke, raising a very important issue. DG, are you responsible for cinema management in the ministry as well, or are you responsible only for the department?
Technically, yes. I can explain.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The first issue related to the amount that we would have paid and would have overspent. There are programs that we undertake in March, which ordinarily we budget in April. There are programs that are held, we always have those overlaps, where programs are undertaken in March, but they are paid in April. They are budgeted in April. So you have that kind of scenario. But over and above that, some of these invoices, you would need to verify them before you make that payment. It's true that if we would have made those payments, we would have overspent. So it's a balance that you must have at any given time. You know, the issue to us is that you must not have invoices that are over 30 days, which is what is important. AG cautioned us with that issue, and we've noted it, but most of those invoices were invoices for services that were rendered or events that were held in March. So that's the issue around that issue. The issue around provincial allocations, what does it mean? It means that we've transferred the money to provinces. They would go and spend the money further. It means that, but at some point, like I said, they were rollovers that they were requested. It means that they didn't spend money in that financial year, the 8 million. So they requested that money be rolled over into the next financial year. It's not our decision alone. We make a recommendation to Treasury. Ultimately, Treasury agrees. It approves those rollovers. But that money is allocated for particular targets. There are targets that we need to achieve through provinces. So they would have we would have given them money. They would have undertaken those projects on our behalf or in partnership with us. So that's where we are. The issue around the correlation between budget and performance, Chairperson, there are targets that would have partially achieved, like the DG said, that the AG would say that it's only a list. But the reality of the situation is that money would have been spent in that particular program. The issue is that reporting. The issue is the reporting at the end. So the AG says that you've not achieved this target, but money has been spent. The program happened, money spent, but the issue is the issue of reporting at the end. So you have those instances, but it's also not the perfect science. I mean, the fact that you'll have a situation where, by virtue of us having spent 99.9%, it means that you'd have. But the difference must not be that much. I agree. But it can't be that at any given time, because we spend 99% of our budget, we would have met 99%. We'd have those issues of reporting, because at the end of the day, it's only considered to have been achieved if you've been able to report your report.
Why is it difficult?
It's not a difficulty, Chairperson. The DG made an example earlier, for example, to say that the province would have given us a list, as an example. A list of participants, but the AG would say, I do not want a list, I need forms and ID copies, and.
Mm-hmm.
But the province would have given us a list of participants. We are not able to. We take that, we give it to AG and say that in terms of our targets, we've met this target. The AG said, no, you've not met this target, because we are not able to verify the completeness of your, yes, you know. So those are the issues at any given time that we grapple with. We've engaged with provinces. We've workshopped them in terms of the requirement. We've sent teams now to provinces to make sure that all the information that the Auditor General require is there. You know, and provinces are able to give us those. So it's an issue that we must address going forward. Our endeavor should be at any given time that the correlation between the budget and performance, there must not be such a disjuncture. But I don't think we'll ever arrive. I don't think there's any department. Yes, you know. I think there's the attitude from our side, Chairperson. We noted the issues that were raised by the Auditor General in the previous financial year, but we're addressing them. The issue around the environment that was done, we've received additional money to employ infrastructure unit, to capacitate our infrastructure unit after we received. After 300 million was appropriated for MIG. But Treasury said build some capacity in the department, but the money was received late. It was received during the agenda. Then we said, I don't think we'll be able to spend this money. There are these programs who are anticipating that we have pressures on goods and services. We requested them that we are not going to transfer the whole money. We are not going to fire the whole budget, but we are going to fire some money towards goods and services in order to address some of these issues. So that's where we are. Treasury now is seriously monitoring departments in spending good money on compensation of employees. Actually, as it is during this past adjustment, they asked us, how much are you not going to be able to spend on compensation of employees? We said about 2 million. We thought that they would allow us to fire them, and they took the money. So it means that we're, as a department now, we've moved to speed to make sure that we're filling all vacant posts that are available, that are there. So that's where we are, Chairperson. Thanks.
Just to put the last issue in the context, the issue is that when you budget the whole year from April to March to pay someone at the level of the cost of employment, if the Treasury gives you that money, not in April, but it gives it to you via an adjustment budget in September, with the same time you get it. So effectively, the money that you now have, you can only spend it from September till March. And you will remain with what you should have spent between April to September. So consequently, that remaining portion, because they gave us money every day, it was that remaining portion that we said to them that if you give it to us now, we will not be able to spend a lot. We can start hiring people now and pay them, but we're going to have this money remaining. Don't you want us to shift it to where we have treasure and we can spend it there? They saw the wisdom of what we said and they agreed with us. But then they came back now and they said, let's see how much money you have at stake. Because if you were an employee, but like the CEO said, it's not a correct price. You have budget of 12 months to pay a director or a new director or whoever the person is. When that person resides, and you advertise on the time it would take to advertise until you feel the vacancy may be 90 days or 3 months or sometimes even 4 months. That 4 months of the salary should have taken becomes savings. So it remains on your book to be there. You should have paid that this person left the whole 12 months. But the person resigned left and it took you like 4 months to hire a new one. Who comes in, carries on with that salary going forward, but you have savings on that much money. So when you have that saving, that's what they were asking us. How much will we have saving be? And we said we invested it would be about 2 million. And they said the money must come. So they took that. So it is not also not because we were not spending the money, that's why they took it. They wanted us immediately to know across all departments what potential savings the department would have in compensation. And that's why all the time we have been moving money from compensation. We have a high staff turnover as the caring but we have a high staff turnover. And because of that, we always experience savings in personnel. And that's why all the time during the adjustment
budget, we then request the treasury to then say, please allow us to take our savings in personnel and put them to good use in where we need them the most, like where their request for attire in schools or whatever, then we can spend it on that than returning it to the revenue fund. So Treasury over the years has been very sympathetic to us and has been giving us all that money. This year is the only year they refused to allow us to move what we saw as savings. They have bigger challenges. They've got fees must fall and they've got this, they've got that. And they are trying to harvest and to do what they call fiscal consolidation and to reduce on government expenditure. So they are even freezing posts. We are one of the few departments where they gave us additional money to hire more people. So it's, we are not in the loop of where they are saying that post, that one, they'll freeze it. So we aren't there yet. I think we are quite fortunate from that point of view. But Chair, just to link it with that, our management committee early this year received a report, an analysis report of all the exit interviews of staff leaving. In the year under review, we had like 12 resignations. I can tell you that of that 12, only one said raised concerns. But all employees that leave, all of them, the key question is whether will you work for SRSA again? Are you happy with your supervisor? Are you? And the comments they give. All our employees, we can share with you their exit interviews. They write gloriously about our institution. They do not say it's a terrible place to work for and that's why we are leaving. So we can give you that, Chair, to share with you. But we did an analysis of all of that and the exit interviews look very good. Let me just respond to some of the key issues. Honestly, I don't know how the impression was created that we are a male-dominated senior management department. It isn't that way. We've got very competent senior women. Because I can assure you that we've got women in high senior positions. In fact, in our department, we only have only one DDG. And that DDG is a woman. There are no other DDGs. And amongst the chief directors and directors, they are women, and very capable women for that matter. So, sorry. Well then, I can do a quick count quickly. In fact, this can tell us now. We can look in there quickly and check where we are. But I'll come back to it now before we close. But I can assure you that we have competent women in positions. The director school spot, the vacancy is finally filled. We have tried to fill it four times. And on each occasion, there's a time we even found a candidate, made an offer. And after we had offered and we thought that the candidate would accept, the candidate simply said, no, I found something else. And then we had to look again. We did our best. This process is painful because it isn't more what we do. After we have interviewed and finished, the DPSA guidelines say that we must send the person to go do competency assessments. That takes forever. I can assure you. That takes forever. The only reason why, and you must contrast this with deputy directors level 12 downwards. Those we fill the vacancies within the prescribed 90 days. We fill them during that period. You can check for yourself and say, but everything senior management upwards, we go up to 6 months filling a vacancy. And that's too long because we wait for the competency assessments. And only when those four companies that are appointed to do this work give you the report. And if the report is not suitable, you cannot appoint. You have to start the process afresh. If the report comes being suitable, often than not, by that time, such a high quality person has left, has moved on, has gone on to find other things and so on. So that is a reality about the public service and what we are dealing with. But finally, we found a competent candidate to start work. I believe the candidate starts on the 1st of December, January. Yeah, I believe the candidate starts on the 1st of January to work. But the vacancy has been filled, the candidate accepted the offer, and we are there. It took us longer, we must accept, but it isn't for lack of trying. Like I say, we had this process, we repeated it four times before we succeeded. So we have been trying, honestly, to find a person. In as far as the issue, I think to emphasize what the CFO has said and to answer Honorable Hatting on this issue, the department is a going concern. This idea that on the midnight of 31st March, it's a cutoff. It's a cutoff in the head because the functions continue. And by the 20th, we are still having championships because during that period, that's when we have the athletics championships, the autumn championships. So we are going to go on. The only thing that we agree with the Treasury on is that on the 31st of March midnight, in our bank, we must not be in the red. This is the requirement. Your account must not be overdrawn by that time. So you have to be in the positive, and that's what we work on. So they've raised it as a concern to say at about 10 million, and it must be remembered that the reason it is like this is precisely because we have changed the format of the National School Sport Championship. We're not doing it by seasons. We're only having the December tournament, that big, big one of where all codes were coming all together, and we're doing it in Pretoria. But this was the first year we disintegrated the tournament, and we said we will have athletics only in March, and we will have in June the seven codes, and we'll have the December, and also have swimming in September. That's what we have distributed them, because that big tournament was becoming too cumbersome. 13,000 children. I mean, just to give you perspective, the Rio Olympics were just 3,480 athletes. That's it. But this is a tournament of about 13,000 children. Before we speak about the technical officials, the referees, the scorekeepers, everybody, all in all, it's a tournament of about 17,000 people. I mean, only Pretoria and Johannesburg can host this, and that's why we have always been there, and because of the multiplicity of the universities, and it's cheaper to use university accommodation. So we couldn't go on like that, and it's a miracle that up to now, having done this thing since 2012, no children has ever been lost, and no, it's just a huge miracle, and we couldn't go on like that, and it was getting more expensive because it also included primary school children. And honestly, the needs of an 8-year-old and the needs of a 17-year-old are quite different. And for every one of these youngsters, we also needed chaperones and all. It has been too cumbersome, and it takes, and even us sports, we cancelled all our programs, and all staff members of the department worked on the school sport championship when it happened. It couldn't go on like that, so we disintegrated it, and then the match tournament came, which was never there before. So that's why, as a going concern, typically we're on a ratio of about 1 million of unpaid invoices by that cut-off date. So while this tournament came, it was a big thing. So we now have invoices in about 10 million. If we pay them, it becomes unauthorized expenditure. So we have to balance out and then say, what are we going to do? Because it's going to be a permanent feature, because the championship is always going to happen in March. So it's a balancing act, Chair. And Treasury sees what we are doing, but the AG says to us, honestly, I mean, Michelle said to us, we are not so concerned, but keep a watchful eye on this because it may lead to unauthorized expenditure. I think that's the comment that the AG was making, and it wasn't necessarily a matter of emphasis, because if they did, then we would not get a clean audit. But it was a caution on their part to say, we ask you to pay attention to this, so this thing doesn't balloon. Keep it in check. We will keep it in check. And the other best way is just that prepayments are not allowed. Because if I was to pay for most services before the championship, then I know that by the time the cutoff date of 31 March comes, I have fewer invoices to pay. But we are not allowed to do that. We are told that services must be rendered first and then you pay after. So that is what I'm saying. This is going to be a semi-permanent feature of our challenge in this regard. The support we're giving to RADO and the CDA, the RADO is the regional anti-doping agency. In fact, to be honest, without us, South Africa, the regional agency will just collapse. And they are fully dependent on the money that we pay in subscriptions. How the anti-doping system works, countries pay pro rata by their own means, by the size of their GDP and every other thing. In this region, we are the strongest economy, and therefore our contribution is the greatest than all others. And that system applies right through the world. Even with WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency, Cabinet in South Africa, a long time ago, 2002, took a decision to say South Africa must pay on behalf of all other African countries that can pay. Because if they don't pay, then it means that their athletes can't compete at international tournaments. So it was a political decision that was made by the country after the request of the African Union to say, can South Africa help us? So we have been on that path like that, and we have been contributing and paying more than what we should pay on behalf of the entire African continent. And even in the region, it's the same story. So the bulk of the support we give is both the technical support as well as the money. So they are fully there. It's just that the SADC headquarters is Botswana, Cameroon. So the head offices of the RADO is there, and of the AU Sports Council Region 5 is also there. So we pay, and even the region, the same thing. In the CDA, the Central Drug Authority of our country, we participate there as a member. We are also expected to contribute by programming to look at things of using sport as a tool against substance abuse and as a tool to educate society in this regard. At the last meeting of the CDA, we were making a presentation on narcotics and related programs that we as sport are driving. And we had done that presentation for the whole thing, and it was accepted and adopted, and our programs were endorsed by the CDA as part of the entire National Drug Master Plan. So that's the support. On the issue of the checks, this is an incentive program that we have as a department. We have a policy within the department that indicate what we must pay and for what type of achievements. So that policy has been verified, and in this regard, we budget for this under our Winning Nation program. and in it we also provide the necessary funding. Let me say this again, this is not a perfect science, Chair. We project, like as I said, we designate tournaments and we say in this one, we anticipate we'll get so many medals, and in this one, so many. And so you can over budget in the sense that the athletes did not ultimately achieve, you know. Or you can under budget in the sense that more athletes have achieved medals than you anticipated. But that's the whole reason why the South African law provides, the PFMA provides for virements. As long as the virements are not above the required 8%, then you can move money within codes to budget for such eventualities. And even where the money was, we had over budgeted, we can always via to the areas where money is required the most. Or where we have savings like in personnel, we can always via to cover for this, but it is there. Are there any of these athletes that have not been paid in this current financial year? In the year under review, no. In the current one, yes, there were a few that were not paid, and there is a reason for that. Let me start. In the Basketball National League, previously what we do is that we give the grant to Basketball South Africa as a federation, and it then takes a portion of that grant and gives it to the league, and the league pays the teams, and the teams pay the players. So ultimately, the players get their money from the teams. So what was different this year was that the National Federation Basketball didn't comply with our requirements for funding. They have not accounted for the money we gave them the previous financial year. They have not submitted the audited financial statements and all of that. As a consequence, there was a problem of how do we pay the players and how ultimately the money gets to the players, because our route is to pay the recognized sport body. Now, we did consultations with the treasurer. We wanted to pay the league itself. But the league, like many other leagues, is a privately owned league. It's, and the teams own the league, and the teams are owned by private individuals. So essentially, it will be like we are paying a company, and there's no competitive bidding or whatever the case. So treasury said, no, we can't do it that way. So finally, after a lot of wrangling and complaints by the players that the league is even coming to an end and they've not been paid their salaries and a cent, we then agreed with the treasury that under the circumstances, there are two ways to do it. Either we pay them via one of the sport NGOs, we give the NGO the money and the NGO pays the players, or alternatively, we then register all the players playing the league and we pay them individually. So that was not ideal for us, and we agreed that we'll pay the players via a sport NGO, and that's what is going to be done. As it relates to the Comrades Marathon Runners, we explained to them that typically this process of paying, it is always reactive. Let me explain that, because you never know which athlete is going to win what. We know the tournaments they are going to, but we have to wait until they have won before they can actually get their reward. And it's only after they have won that then we approach them. After the announcement is made to say, you won, you will get this much, then only then we start doing the necessary paperwork. So the athlete tends to believe that it is like me, I owe Honorable Harting, I just open my laptop and I log into my personal bank account and I say beneficiary and I load the you and I just say pay. In government, it doesn't work like that. I think in their view, we must pay them within the week, because you see it. Immediately after the announcement is made, the following day they start calling. They say, where's our money? You know, so. And then typically we write to all of them. Any one of them, including Sunat Felyun, who says to you, they have never received an email from us telling them when we're going to pay them, they are being disingenuous. It's just that they don't accept our time frame. We normally tell them, here is a form. But all of you, if you must give it to us in writing, and you must go take that form to your bank. Your bank must stamp it and confirm that the account is yours, you know. Because you cannot just say, when we say, no, we want bank accounts, you want to tell us on the phone, you say, my number is 47, what? And then we must just say, well, hold on, and write it and pay you. We can't do that. There's accountability. Everybody knows that they've got to follow the process as it's supposed to be followed, and they've got to do everything. Other athletes say, no, but when we were promised, no one told us that we have to go to a bank. Now I must be running around, and so on. I'm in training. I want the money. And so you have that problem. And also other athletes, by the time we announce, they are in Europe. They are on a circuit. They're only going to come 2 months later. Even Sunette, when we made that announcement, she was not there at the airport. She was wherever she is in Europe. And then she decided to come back. And then we sent her the form. By now she knows the drill, because it's not the first time we're paying her. She knows the drill. And no, she doesn't do the form, do anything and so on, up until she decides to say, I now want my money, you know, and then she starts demanding it, you know. And she says, if you don't pay me by this week, you can stuff it, keep your money. And she uses very foul language. So we are okay with it. We don't have a problem. We have promised we're going to pay her. I think it was unfortunate that the minister had an exchange with her on that. We should have just kept quiet. But we had paid everybody who had given us those forms. In the medal contenders, it was only her who had not yet been paid. And we had directed that as soon as she gives us everything, she must be paid. And I believe that, as Ascock says, that she has now submitted, she will be paid. There's no issue about it. And there was another group of the Comrades Marathon runners. Those ones, they told us they are, I think we had already paid 3 of the 5 that were supposed to be paid, but the 2, we struggled really to get the forms out of them. But I am happy because I've just received an SMS now telling me that all 5 now have been paid. So there's no one now we owe from where we are concerned and where we are sitting. But athletes need to know this. All of them must know that it takes time. We have to go, set aside the money, do the necessary paperwork, do the necessary departmental approvals. Typically, this process will take us 3 months. And that's what our email to them say. They must wait. So every time this happens, you will hear on radio that we have not paid so-and-so. But even before the time frame we ourselves have set has passed. Because we take it that if we told you that you're going to get your money by this time, expect it then. And if indeed we have passed that time, then it is only fair that, yes, you can say whatever you want to say. And say, they promised me the money, now they are not paying me that money. But everybody who does comply, we tend to pay them. And we give them the money as quickly as we have it. The issue of the facilities in rural areas and that, honestly, it is, we, the Department of Sport nationally, in terms of the constitution, do not have the mandate for sport facilities. This is the truth. The municipalities and provinces are given the medium-sized facilities, including all of the stadia and so on. And the basic municipal clusters and local facilities and ward-based facilities have to be done by municipalities. But in this country, you find a mayor who, by law, is obligated to provide sport programming to children, writing to the Minister of Sport and asking that the minister give him the money for a local mayoral cup and for a kid and all of that. And whereas it is really their responsibility, you know, because they know our job is a regulatory thing, we're a policy machine. Treasury only gives us money for facilities to do demonstration programs, to test new models, to look at whether in DR where the tar is melting and so on, can we put a tartan track there? Can we put something that, and to test those type of things? That's why we work with the Center for Scientific Industrial Research to test new models and new types of facilities for rollout in communities. And we can then share the lessons with provinces and municipalities to say, these are the best way of doing the facilities. We have now found ourselves caught up in this thing by default of having to deliver sport facilities and expectations that we will. But if you look at our budget for sport facilities, it's just 10 million. But that is an indication. It tells you clearly that it's only to test new models. It's not for a rollout. The rollout money is with the MIG. The 15% of MIG is ring-fenced, the key component for delivery of sport facilities. And truth be told, the municipalities aren't using that money for purposes of delivering sport facilities. They do every other thing except sport facilities with the money. And that's the answer why, honorable members, the money is there, and that's why we are fighting that if the municipalities aren't using this 15%, rather we harvest all of it, then you can expect us, then the national department, to say, where are the facilities? If we have that 2 billion a year, then yes, we will roll out the facilities and ask us where the facilities are. But as long as the money is given to the municipalities, then the municipalities must account as to why are they not building the sport facilities where they should. On the assistance to local athletes, that is an issue which is ongoing. We had previously been criticized that we are so big in urban areas, but we are not found in rural areas. In this year under review, we launched the Rural Sport Improvement Program. 60 royal households across the 8 provinces, and with Gauteng working with farming communities. We are rolling out that program. On the 25th of September this year in Mulej, me and the minister went there to go see 60 villages competing in the eliminations of the district there, and they will go on the national tournament, will go on to be played in Umtata early next year. So that program is growing. We will increase on the number of the rural households. We give them money and kit to run local leagues and to run local teams. So as many of the royal households that are interested in the traditional councils that come on board, we will continuously support them and increase on the number next year. But that's the program we're running as a response to supporting children in rural areas and children who are not. We will not, with the current budget we have, be everywhere. It's not possible. But this was our demonstration of our commitment to reaching out to rural communities and to making sure that them too have a place under the sun. But with respect to the other issues, Kiba, Mahasakas and Pepetlana and all of that, I think we truly appreciate that. And that's why we have now broadened the scope of our Indigenous Games Festival to also include cultural dance and cultural activities, and to make it a truly heritage festival in this regard. And we have now codified the ninth code of Indigenous Games, the Istokis. We're investigating 2 others. And we hope that in future we will grow the compendium of the number of games in there. But now there are children. I can tell you that there is in excess countrywide more than 25,000 athletes who play across these 9 codes. Whether it's Diketo or Khadi or whatever, it is there. And we take those games very seriously now. And we are looking at them in that way. On the issue of provincial allocations, I think we have responded to this, but the formula is clearly biased to smaller provinces. But this has been by consensus with both the Treasury as well as all the 9 provinces. If we didn't do that, sport in this country will only be played in KwaZulu-Natal, Western Cape and Gauteng. We had to change that. The biggest beneficiary of this formula is the Northern Cape, being the smallest of all provinces. What we do is that we take the entire grant, 533 million, and we then start with a baseline of 20 million each province. And after we have given each province and all 9 provinces have 20 million, we take the remainder of the budget, then only then apply the equitable share formula to the remainder and give all the provinces the remaining money. And after then, we then deduct 1% from the Gauteng budget and 1% from the KwaZulu-Natal budget, and we give it to Northern Cape. And then in addition to that, we also then look at the national priority programs, and then we designate and we say 5%, like in this current grant, we'd say 10% of the provincial academy's budget must be ring-fenced for the building of the national training center, and then you would see the money then gets taken out in that way. So that's the formula that we apply, but that formula, after we started using it in 2012, it was the first time Northern Cape children could participate in all national tournaments. Previously, they chose this and that, and they never participated in Indigenous Games, they never participated in others, and even in school sport, they would only say they'll participate in football and netball. Now you see them participating across all codes and across everything, because 1% of Gauteng and 1% of KwaZulu-Natal, to Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal it looks very small, but Northern Cape is the biggest, because now Northern Cape ends up with about 30-something million. But if we didn't apply that formula, the budget of Northern Cape for all the children there would be 8 million a year. This is as simple as it is, if we simply strictly just applied the equitable share formula to it. So, but that scheme, Treasury said as long as the provinces agree, it can be done. So we consulted all provinces and all of them agreed with the proposal. On the issue of cooperatives for sports attire, it's something we can explore in truth, but we know that the cooperatives of social development are doing school uniforms and not necessarily sports attire. Sports attire, it may be simpler for things like athletics, but for more sophisticated type of codes like cricket and so on, it will be a tall order for the cooperatives to be able to do that type of attire. And it's something we can explore, how far we can go with it. Let me speak to the issue of the clean audit versus the targets that are not achieved. And in that regard, I would wish to refer honorable members to the report of the AG, which is attached to the CFO's presentation at the back. If you look at the AG, he says, I assess the reliability of the reported performance information to determine whether it was valid, accurate, and complete. I did not identify any material findings on the usefulness and reliability of the reported performance information for the following programs: Active Nation, Winning Nation, and Sport Infrastructure Support. And then he goes on to then give his opinion about that. And even if you look on the page before, he would tell you that I further performed tests to determine whether indicators and targets were well-defined, verifiable, specific, measurable, and time-bound and relevant, as required by the National Treasury's framework. And then he goes on to indicate his finding that he has found that it has been that way. So there is no contradiction between not achieving some of the targets and whether those that have been achieved give you a clean audit or not. Obviously, they worry. If you achieve less than 50% of the overall targets, then you can't get a clean audit opinion on performance information. But in this case, in this report, he gives us both a clean audit report on performance information and also on financial information. And then we were asked what the number of targets. I think we must link this. There is 34 targets which are linked with money. And there is 3 targets, like the one where we lobby. We don't need money ourselves to spend on something for us to convince the 6 provinces to budget for sport. So there will be those type of targets. There are 3 of them that are not linked to money. So when we use 37, 34, we use them interchangeably, but strictly speaking, our targets are 34, because the 34 are the ones where financial inputs are linked there. But because these non-financial targets are also in the APP, we have to count them. So they are 37 in totality, but that's the difference between the two. And our reporting standard is exactly as you say. It's exactly as prescribed by the Treasury framework. If you had said you'll achieve, you'll support 10 athletes, you supported 9, you have not achieved that target. So we don't count it in. So when we say 79%, it is 79% of those that we have fully achieved or exceeded, and not the ones that we have not. But if you look even at the ones that we have not, some of them we were so close, and some of them we actually believe we have achieved them. But the standards by which the AG operates, like as the CFO said, they will not be accepted. Although I gave the example of the Free State with the video of the big walk, where you could see really people were walking there. But if the IDs were not attached, the AG, although he sees the video, he says, yeah, but your portfolio of evidence doesn't say what must be done. So I think that is the situation of what we are raising there. On the issue of BRICS Games, why we started with men, it is primarily because first we couldn't agree on the codes, but finally we agreed on football. And even when we did, we then found that for the under 17, because we agreed it will be junior, the Russians felt that we should send Bafana Bafana. They wanted a senior competition, and we felt it's not helping us. And we and Brazil and India agreed that then such a tournament is an additional burden on us, but it doesn't help us in any way. But if we have a junior tournament, then it works better for us, and it could be junior championships as a feeder for this, because we also have other tournaments, and these junior teams don't have many of this type of tournaments to get international exposure. But once we agreed on that principle that it would be the under 17 tournament, it became apparent that in India there is no women's football team under 17. So, yes, they have promised that in the next 4 years they would have started the teams. And that's why I was saying that we will then go on to introduce the women's thing, and then we'll go on to netball. Because also in India, netball is not that big as it is with ourselves here. And the Russians are also big on it. But Brazil and them, they are not that big. They have netball teams, but they aren't as serious as it's supposed to be. So that is why we are saying that we will go to that and then go to netball. We will still agree on other codes, because right now we have agreed on football and netball. And like I said, the Indians want us to include cricket, but the Russians aren't so big about it, and the Brazilians. So that debate will still come. But our consideration was on truly not on the basis that men are somewhat superior or special. But had we had teams across all the BRICS of under 17 girls teams in football, I think they would have played in this tournament as well. So we will get there in due course. It wasn't because of any other thing, Chair, except that. The point about unemployed graduates who are not so educated, or unemployed people, youth, who are not so educated, it's something that can be considered. But I think I'm not so sure how it will work in our department. The reason for this, Chair and Honourable Member, is that many of those people are employed on S level 2 employees and level 3, I think up until level 4. Some of them may be on level 4 in the public service. These are your cleaners and this, that. In our department, we don't have level 2, 3, and 4. We start with level 5. So the requirements are much steeper. We start there, because those are practitioners, and then they go on to 7, and this is an entry level of the practitioner. So if we were to try, because all our other functions, like cleaning, what, they are all outsourced. We don't employ cleaners or what and so on. So it's cheaper. This is the truth. For such a small department, if we were to do what a traditional department tries to do, we will spend almost 40% of the budget on ourselves and not on the intended beneficiaries. So in order to keep within the normative norm of 12 to 18% on administration and operations, we have to do the extraordinary things. Our budget is just so small that one small significant thing changes the complexion so much. So because of that, we have to make hard choices. It's not that easy. So that's why we start with level 5, and that's why at that entry level, degree is the requirement. So, and I think that's where we are, honestly, with the situation. I'm not so sure how it can work. Perhaps through RPL, the recognition of prior learning, where a person can show that I may not have the actual qualification, but I've got the skill, and SACA does the RPL and confirms such a person as such. But I think that's where we are with that. And the issue of the IDs, we will give you the information, but it was during the match championship where all the children, unfortunately majority white, the parents refused to give us the thing. We still have the forms, but we don't have the IDs and all of that. And even in the space of the ID, nothing has been given. The AG, by the way, refused to accept this explanation. So all those forms of those children, we had to put them aside and count only those that had the IDs. But we know they were there. Some of them won medals. We can show you the photos that they were on the podium. They competed. They were there. But we can't count them because the information is outstanding. On the issue, Chair, of training, did we really favor not employing people so we can via? No, that's not the case, Chair. We had provided a budget, and I think the CFO, when he presented on the cut sitter thing, you may have seen. Our policy is simple. We say that if you are a staff member and you want to study, you'll have a bursary for it. This is our study policy, and largely because we have a very, like I said, a youthful workforce. And so all our employees use up that opportunity. It's never a perfect sense, because it's January, you are going to receive applications and you don't know how many of them you're going to get and who's going to apply for what and to study where. Also, the same thing, you may project that the project management course, if you do it with a private training provider and then he comes in-house and he trains 20, it's cheaper. But if you send that one employee to VETS Business School to go do that project management there, you may end up paying about 30,000-40,000 for that just one employee. So on our program, what we do is that we take the personal development plans of each and every employee, because when a supervisor evaluates an employee and say, you are not performing in this area, that, and then the employee says, yeah, I don't have the skill, they must enter into an agreement. By law, we can't move to poor performance on the employee, provided we have shown that we have supported this employee and we have trained that employee. So if that employee says, I need help, I need to be trained, I don't know how to use Excel, so train me on that. And then he goes out, and then we would say, all right, we will look. We then do an evaluation after the closing date of how many employees have asked for Excel. And if there are more than 10, then it makes sense to hire a company that will come do it in-house. But if there are one or three of them, then we must send them to institutions that can train them on that thing. And the PDP, by law, is a contract between the employer and the employee. Once your supervisor signs it, it's fait accompli, because that employee, should he fail to perform, he's going to say, yeah, but I told you I can't do the job, and you didn't, as the employer, support me and train me. And that's the problem you sit with. So as a consequence of that, when more employees come via the PDP, and their supervisors have said they must do this, we are somewhat under a legal obligation, Chair, to train them on those specific skill sets that their PDPs are saying. And that is why at one of our management committee, I was addressing the directors to say, don't just write anything. When an employee says, no, I want this, even when you know, I mean, if an employee says to me that he wants to do Microsoft project, but this employee is a secretary, chances are that she'll never run a project unless she changes the job. But if she says she wants that, we must balance between the obligation to train vis-a-vis the developmental needs of the employee. Because you must still also, if he says, my future pathway is this, when I'm not going to be secretary for the rest of my life, but in order for me to become something, assistant director, I would need those skills. But those are not the skills that are intended to enable her to do the current job. So those that must enable her to do the current job are what we must prioritize, not necessarily the developmental, although we have a mandate to develop employees to grow and to seek other opportunities. So I think that's the dilemma we have had. And so when that happens, we via money, Chair. If we have more people to train, we via the money to be able to do and achieve that obligation.
DG, I'm sorry, I will have to limit you in terms
okay.
of time. We've exhausted our committee time. Given a profit.
Thanks, Chair. I will end with the issue of SAFA. These other ones, I think the sponsor thing I've answered. I'll just speak about the SAFA thing.
Mm-hmm.
Chances are that, yes, they will go to the red again, Chair. You see, we are a signatory to the Olympic Charter. We're not supposed to interfere in the administration and running of the actual federation, but we're supposed to monitor them, and we do.
Mm-hmm.
When we entered SAFA the first time, you remember there were 52 million in the red. They were facing liquidation.
Mm-hmm.
We have helped them. They stabilized the finances. We ring-fenced money for them for junior teams. When we went to them, Chair, you would recall in 2012, the under-23 men's team, Amadou Duke, had not played a single match in 7 years. So, and the junior teams were virtually non-existent. But today, as we speak, Bashimanyana, the under-14 team, had qualified for the Danone Cup. The under-17 Amajita have gone to the World Cup and they finished in the semifinals. The Majimbos went on as well to go compete in the African Nations Cup. And Madrukluk went to the Olympics. They didn't do that well there, but they went there. And this is after a long period of lapse. And even when you look at the female teams, Makarebe went on to compete in the COSAFA Cup and won. And Basizana went on to compete for the African Nations qualifiers. They were eliminated in the second round. But Banyana Banyana went on to qualify for the Olympics, and they went there. They didn't do that well. But with our strategy of insisting on the feeder and on the pipeline of players, SAFA is doing the right things now. But they're under-attracting as many sponsors as possible and as fast as they need to, as compared to rugby and cricket. But you know, we had intervened and helped them for the national senior teams and for the junior teams, and they had a sponsorship with SAA. But rugby had to die for that to happen. And that's why rugby has since migrated now to British Airways for that, which is an unfortunate thing, but it has benefited football in one way or the other, because rugby's requirements are much higher than what football requirements are. And I think that's where we are with it, but we are intervening, Chair. We will not leave them to go to the red until they have collapsed. And then the last thing, Chair, the audit, we have projected that the audit of facilities will cost us 8 million rands in one province. So you can anticipate why I'm saying, with the current budget and investment levels, that's why we're pacing ourselves to a 12-year period. And I think we're just being realistic about it. If we had the money, we would do it immediately. There's no doubt about it. But we simply just don't have the type of resources required to do this. So that's why we're doing it in modules, module after module. So it's affordable over the years. And then on the issue of boxing has gotten an unqualified audit opinion after a long time. And just to assure the chair, the board is still intact. It's chaired by Ndambira Vele. What we have done is to appoint a new CEO. Yes, Tsholofelo Mtaka. He's a man. Yes, but he's a man, Chair. He's a man. There's nothing much I can say about it. And I'm not in charge fully of the staff or the senior managers in the ministry. The chief of staff is. These employees, unfortunately, somehow they are counted when it comes to performance information and contracts that must be signed. And they are included because on our PERSAL, on payroll, PERSAL picks them up as 13 and above. And it says these are senior management. But if you know by law and the recent case rulings, including the one here in the Western Cape when from Premier Helen Zille's advisor, who sat on the tender committee for the tender for TBW and Lascaris for the rebranding of the province, that case is very seminal because it laid down the foundations for understanding conflict of interest between ministry staff and the department and the relationship. If you read what the judge there says, it's quite clear that those staff members are not managers in the strict sense of it. So they don't sit on my management committee. If they sit, they sit by invitation. And they don't adjudicate in tenders or participate in recruitment or anything that is related to the department. They are there to primarily support the minister and the executive head. And therefore, as such, they should not strictly be. It is the agreement between them and the minister, according to the wishes of the minister, as what the minister requires them to do. That's why the minister can tell them any day, he can wake up and say, "You, I no longer want you," and they must just go. That's how it is, and they get paid a tolerance allowance. They get 4,700 and something on top of the salary of a normal director because of the huge risk and the stress they are supposed to be working under, and they can be fired anytime. So because of that, honestly, they are under no obligation, and I have no enforcement measure to insist that they enter into performance agreements or to give me. The only thing which at law they are required to disclose, and after the labor court case, is their financial information. That one, the financial disclosure, they are under obligation, and you will quickly see that on that one, even the Public Service Commission reports favorably for us, that all of them, without fail, all of them, because they know on that single issue, if they don't do it, I have a right to charge them. So, but with this one, of performance agreement, they just look at me and say, no, DG, we are not going to do that. So that's why it will show in our report that those staff in the ministry do not fill in the performance agreement. But if you look at all the employees under my control, all of them sign that thing. Thanks, Chair.
No, thank you, DG, for the responses, and the CFO and all the members of your team. We've come to the end of the engagement. Thank you for update as well, where you clarified issues as well. Those of us wanted to have more understanding of the issues of the department, they had it. We want to congratulate you once again. I just am adding my voice on to what the members have said in terms of your clean audit, but the critical issue, as members are saying, is to maintain, to sustain it over a period of time. And those issues of invoices in March, a bulk having to be paid, the balancing act that have to exercise, take care of that so that you don't jeopardize your good image of a clean audit. Most of the department find it difficult to work on the findings of the audit. But one is pleased to note that you are able to work on the findings. But I don't know if it's because you are running a fairly small budget. I don't know if that is the reason why, but all in all, an audit finding is an audit finding, irrespective of how big your budget is. And maybe the other issue that one wishes to raise is that in your presentations, please give us a clearer perspective of the provincial picture. Because as we sit here, we've always said this, we represent provinces. When, for instance, you say you have identified 30 projects for the 300 million that have been able to get from MIG, where are they? In which province are they? How are we going to monitor as these members if we don't know where those projects are going to be? And also, we appreciate the fact that you've been able to quote Indigenous games as well. I think it is a step towards the right direction because our own things as Africans have always been left in the periphery, and we tend to clamor for all things that are coming into our terrain with people from other areas other than the Africans. So we want to congratulate you for that. And then the issue of facilities, lastly, Gigi, you maintained that it will take 12 years. But I think maybe we need to lobby the provinces that are not budgeting for sports to do so. And if we can successfully do that, also as members, I think we'd shorten the period by quite a number of years. The fact that we're sitting at this point with provinces that don't budget for sports, it's unheard of. Our children are having a problem of drug substance abuse because of lack of sporting facilities. Now, if we sit with provinces that don't think that sports education is important, it is very unfortunate, not at this time and era in South Africa. So with those few words, DG, I want to say that we thank you very much for the responses, but also don't remember to talk to your political heads that they are required, they are expected, at least one of them, at least should be in attendance of this engagement. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.